Welcome to And With Your Spirit, an Iris original program featuring articles from a variety of publications that bring you up to date on the world of food, spirits, and entertaining. I'm your reader today, Andrew Haupt. Our first article today is a recipe. How about six new pancake recipes that go way beyond buttermilk? Well, we'll just check that out here. How about Austrian apple pancakes? Doesn't that sound good? Well, the actual time it'll take to make it is 25 minutes, the total time 55 minutes, yields 8 servings. This published in January of 2020 by Margarita Mansky. Margarita Mansky published this. It's in foodandwine.com here. A traditional Kaiser Schmarrn is torn or cut after baking crossed with compote. At her Los Angeles restaurant, Republic, Chef Margarita Mansky serves her vision whole with the compote baked right in to layer the flavor into each bite. So the ingredients you'll need to make this recipe are a fourth cup of unsalted butter, plus more for greasing the skillet, 3/4 of a cup of granulated sugar divided, plus more for dusting the skillet. Also, one large Fuji apple peeled and sliced into 1/4-inch thick slices, and then 1.5 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice, also 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt divided, 3 tablespoons, that's 1.5 ounces of gold rum, such as Bacardi, that's good stuff, that'll be divided. Also 3 large egg yolks at room temperature, 2 ounces of cream cheese at room temperature, 2/3 cup of sour cream, that's about 5 ounces worth at room temperature, also 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour sifted, 7 large egg whites at room temperature, 1/4 teaspoon of cream of tartar, and then finally, dulce de leche ice cream and powdered sugar for serving. So here's how to make it. In step 1, preheat your oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit with the oven rack in the lower third of the oven. Combine the butter and 1/4 cup of granulated sugar in a medium skillet over medium heat. Cook, stirring constantly until the sugar starts to dissolve, the butter is melted, and the mixture is lightly browned. That's going to take about 3 to 5 minutes. Then add apple, lemon juice, and the 1/4 teaspoon of salt. Cook, stirring constantly until the apples are crisp tender and the sauce is syrupy. That'll take about 2 minutes. The sauce may seize up when you add the apples, but will smooth out as it cooks. Remove the skillet from heat and then turn off the burner. In step 2, pour 2 tablespoons of the rum into a heat-proof measuring cup with a pour spout. Working quickly, pour rum into the skillet with the apple mixture. Carefully ignite the fumes just above the mixture, with a stick lighter or a long match. Then gently shake the skillet until the flames extinguish, and that'll take about 20 seconds, or cook for about 20 seconds. In step 3, place the skillet over medium-high heat and cook, stirring often until the mixture is syrupy, and that'll take about 1 minute and 30 seconds. Then you'll pour the apple mixture through a fine wire mesh strainer into a bowl, reserving the syrup in a bowl for drizzling. Cool the apple slices completely, that'll take about 15 minutes, and set aside. In step 4, whisk together the egg yolks, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, and remaining 1 tablespoon of rum into a large bowl. Then whisk in the cream cheese and sour cream until mostly smooth. Whisk in the flour and remaining 1/4 teaspoon of salt until smooth. Then pour the batter through a fine wire mesh strainer into a large bowl, pressing the mixture with the back of a spoon to remove any lumps, then set that aside. In step 5, beat the egg whites in a bowl of a heavy-duty stand mixer fitted with a whisk attachment on medium speed until frothy, and that'll take about 30 seconds. So then reserve the yolks for another use. Add cream of tartar and continue beating on medium speed, gradually adding the remaining 1/4 cup of granulated sugar until the mixture is glossy and forms soft peaks, about 2 to 3 minutes worth. Do not overwhip. Working in 2 batches, gently fold the egg white mixture into the batter mixture until just combined. In step 6, grease a 10-inch oven-proof skillet with butter, dust with granulated sugar, then arrange the flambéed apple slices into an even layer on the bottom of the skillet. Top with batter, smothering the top. Then bake in a preheated oven until golden brown, puffed and set for 20-30 minutes, tenting with aluminum foil after 22 minutes if needed to prevent excess browning. Then top with ice cream and dust with powdered sugar and serve immediately with reserved flambéed apple syrup. Something you can make ahead. Apples in the syrup mixture can be made one day ahead. Also, you can refrigerate the leftover egg yolks in an airtight container for up to 3 days. And there you have it, Austrian apple pancakes. Well, if you're having that for dinner, you might be interested in having a drink with that. Well, we'll look at one now from imbibemagazine.com and hear about it. How about the Fresh Bay Gimlet, or Gimlet? You'll often see dried bay leaves used to season stocks, sauces, and stews during the cold weather months. Here we're using fresh bay leaves that grow wild all over the region, says Delaney Oyster House General Manager Kevin King of this simple twist on the Gimlet. The fresh bay leaves add a spicy pine note that complements the botanicals found in gin, he says. So what you'll need to make this are 2 ounces of gin. King uses St. George Terroir. Also, 3/4 ounce of fresh bay leaf cordial. Also, 3/4 ounce of fresh lime juice. A splash of sparkling water is the final ingredient. The tools you'll need are a shaker and a strainer, the glass, a coupe glass, and then finally, garnish. What you'll need there is a bay leaf and sea salt. What you'll do to make this, shake the first 3 ingredients together in a shaker tin with ice. Then you'll strain into the coupe glass and top with a splash of sparkling water and garnish. Very easy to do. For fresh bay cordial, place 6 to 8 bay leaves and 12 ounces of cold simple syrup in a 1-to-1 ratio into a blender. Blend on high for 30 seconds and then fine strain and store refrigerated for up to 3 weeks. Again, that is from Kevin King at the Delaney Oyster House in Charleston, South Carolina. And while the Austrian pancakes might have been a dessert, or you might have thought of it that way, it was actually a main course. Well, how about some dessert options? Foodandwine.com has a listing optimistically looking ahead towards spring with spring recipes. And this one was submitted all the way back in April 2012, by Mike Latta. It's for cornmeal almond cake with strawberries and mascarpone. So we'll read that now and hear about it. This buttery cornmeal cake contains more than 1/2 pound of toasted almonds, giving it an excellent nutty flavor. Instead of using plain whipped cream as a topping, Chef Mike Latta whips a combination of cream and mascarpone for a bit of tanginess. The active time it'll take to make this is 30 minutes, the total time 1 hour and 45 minutes, and it yields 1 9-inch cake as far as serving sizes. So the ingredients for the cake, get ready to take some notes here. There are several. What you'll need for the cake itself are 3 cups of sliced blanched almonds. That's about 10 ounces worth. Also, 1/3 cup of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 stick plus 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter softened, also 1 cup of sugar, 1 teaspoon of pure vanilla extract, 3 large eggs at room temperature, the finely grated zest of 2 lemons, 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, and finally, for the cake, you'll need 1 cup of fine yellow cornmeal. For the topping, you'll need 3/4 cup of heavy cream, 1/2 cup of fresh mascarpone cheese, 3 tablespoons of confectioner's sugar, and then finally 1 quart of strawberries, hulled and sliced 1/4 inch thick. So here's how to make it. In step 1, make the cake. Preheat your oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Butter and flour a 9-inch round cake pan, then spread the almonds on a large rimmed baking sheet and bake for 5 minutes, stirring once until golden. Then let cool completely and transfer the almonds to a food processor and process until finely ground but not pasty. In step 2, make the cake. In a medium bowl, sift together the flour, baking powder, and salt. In a large bowl, using an electric mixer at medium speed, beat the butter with the sugar and vanilla, scraping down the bowl until light and fluffy, about 2 minutes worth. Beat in the eggs, 1 at a time, beating well between additions. Scrape down the bowl and beat the batter until fluffy, about 1 minute worth. Then beat in the lemon zest and juice. With a rubber spatula, fold the mixture into the batter, then the cornmeal and the ground almonds. In step 3, make the cake. Scrape the batter into the prepared pan and bake for about 45 minutes until a cake tester inserted in the center comes out with a few moist crumbs attached. Then transfer the cake to a wire rack, still in the pan, and let cool to room temperature. In step 4, make the topping. In a large stainless steel bowl, using an electric mixer, whip the cream to soft peaks, add the mascarpone and confectioner's sugar, and whip until barely firm peaks form. In step 5, the final step, run a thin knife around the side of the cake pan and invert the cake onto the wire rack. Place a plate on top of the cake and turn the cake right side up. Cut the cake into the wedges and serve the mascarpone, cream, and strawberries. We're moving on now to some news items from foodandwine.com. Why the year 2020 is looking dangerous for wine lovers is written by Ray Isle in January of 2020. A looming 100% tariff will be a disaster for anyone who loves European wines, and here's what you can do to help stop it. Are you a fan of Whispering Angel Rosé, or for that matter, any Provençal Rosé? How about Chianti or Côte de Rhône? Or do you drink Spanish wines such as Rioja, Albarino, Priorat, Cava, Barolo, Barbaresco? How about Prosecco? If I'm butchering any of those names, my deepest apologies, everyone. Those pronunciations, I'm not the best at that. It's going to take some learning. Would you like to pay 100% more for them in 2020? It says, referring to these wines, or perhaps not even be able to find them for sale at all? Because that's what we're looking at. On December 12th, the current administration, that'd be the Trump administration, proposed a 100% tariff on all European wines, as well as European cheeses, olive oils, Scotch and Irish whiskies, and other food products to take effect in early 2020. The tariff will amplify a punitive 25% tariff already in place, and both have to do with an ongoing dispute between the U.S. and Europe regarding aircraft manufacturing subsidies, as well as, confusingly, a dispute about digital revenue taxes in France. Let's leave aside the international politics for the moment and look at the practical effect that this will have on both U.S. wine consumers and the U.S. wine business as a whole. First, you, the wine consumer. There is no possible way for the U.S. importers and wholesalers to absorb 100% tariffs without raising prices drastically. The $15 bottle of Chianti you like to pour for dinner will become a $30 bottle, and the $30 bottle of champagne you bought for someone's birthday will become a $60 bottle. But you, like most consumers, aren't going to be willing to pay double the price for your wine. The end result will likely be that importers and wholesalers will be forced to stop bringing these wines to the U.S. market. They simply will not be competitive in the market anymore, and you might think, well, fine, I'll skip my Chianti and my Rioja and my Bordeaux and stick to California Cabernet and Chilean Sauvignon Blanc. That's your choice, but there are other costs involved. The truth is that the primary damage that will be done by this tariff will be to jobs and businesses in the United States. The European Union exports some 3.8 billion euros in revenue for U.S. companies. European wine producers will certainly be damaged in the short term by this tariff, but the majority of them will rework their export structures to concentrate on other markets, particularly growing ones like China, which through taxes and tariffs currently imposes a 93% duty on U.S. wines, thanks to another ongoing trade dispute, a situation which has crippled U.S. wineries' ability to participate in the fastest growing wine market in the world. The businesses that won't be able to recover will be U.S.-based importers who concentrate on European wines. Those are mostly small family-owned companies that have built their businesses over many years in a highly competitive marketplace. Many will go out of business. It's impossible to sustain for any length of time an overnight 100% hike in cost of goods. As Eric Solomon of North Carolina-based European Seller says, the brunt of the penalty is going to be borne by Americans like myself that live here, that work here. We're a small company. I employ 20 or so people. But if you add the other companies like mine and the 60 distributors I work with nationally and all the retailers and restaurateurs who buy our wines and other importers' wines, it's massive. We're all in this together. It's like being in a ship that's about to be torpedoed, he said. Some people will argue that American wineries will be helped by these tariffs. That's unlikely. Almost all U.S. wholesalers, the legally mandated middle tier in the U.S. alcohol distribution system, and a $166 billion business, including liquor and beer, sell wines from both Europe and the United States. As Harman Skernick of the New York-based distributor Skernick Wines says American wineries need a healthy three-tier distribution system in order to survive, putting distributors in peril by removing 50% or more of the revenue. Most distributors trade in both domestic and imported wines and spirits. This will have disaster effects on American wineries, too. In full disclosure, these tariffs could possibly affect our bottom line as a digital and print publisher as well. European as well as domestic wineries advertise in Food & Wine magazine and on foodandwine.com, which I'm reading from right now. It's very scary. In the end, wine has nothing to do with disputes in the aerospace or digital sectors, except as a useful bargaining chip for trade negotiators. But the potential human cost of being a bargaining chip is very real, as is the potential effect on consumer choice. There's zero reason that you, as a wine consumer, should lose access to many of the greatest wines of the world because of an international dispute regarding Airbus and Boeing. Nor is there any reason that thriving U.S. wine businesses, most of them small and independently owned, should face extinction because of it. Take a glance through the comments opposing this tariff on the U.S. Trade Representative's website. You'll see that they come from salespeople who are worried that their jobs will be impacted, wine store owners who may have to lay off staff, wine importers who are worried that after 20 years in the business, they'll be forced to close up shop, servers and staff in restaurants that sell European wines, regular people with jobs whose livelihoods will be thrown into question by a draconian penalty in service to a dispute that has nothing to do with their businesses at all. If you love wine and don't feel like an unrelated trade dispute should restrict your freedom to buy the bottles you love best or simply find the possible cost to American businesses alarming, you should tell the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, which is required to accept comments from the public until January 13th, which that date may have passed by the reading of this publication, but you might try to contact them anyway. Contacting your representative would be a good idea also. And it gives links to email local representatives as well as the U.S. trade representatives on the Food & Wine website. Very scary stuff. In other news, in a short story written by Bridget Hallinan and published by foodandwine.com, Girl Scouts have launched a new cookie for 2020, and here's how it tastes, is what they're saying. Lemon Ups are crispy, lemony, and etched with inspiring phrases. If one grew up on Girl Scout cookies, you're bound to have a favorite. Maybe it's the crunchy Thin Mints covered in a layer of chocolate. That's my favorite. The Caramel Delights, known as Samoas, are also a classic. As Girl Scout cookie season officially kicks off for 2020, the company has announced a new variety joining the lineup. Lemon Ups, a crispy lemon cookie baked with messages inspired by Girl Scout entrepreneurs, will be available in select areas as of Tuesday. And that might have already happened by the time you hear this broadcast. When you open a package, you'll find cookies etched with one of eight different phrases, including, I'm an innovator, or I am bold, or I am creative, and other one says, I am strong. In fact, Girl Scouts revamped packaging across the cookie lineup, showing members camping, canoeing, designing robots, and more activities that can be funded by cookie sales. Girl Scouts of the USA CEO Sylvia Acevedo said in a statement that the program is meant to teach girls business, entrepreneurship, leadership, and financial literacy skills, helping to position them for success. Food & Wine got an early taste of the Lemon Ups and found the taste and smell quite similar to Girl Scouts Lemonades, shortbread sliced with tangy lemon-flavored icing. In this case, there's lemon glaze instead of lemon icing, and the messages replaced the etched lemon slice design. As one can imagine, the flavor is very lemon-forward, but it's a nice combination with the crumbly, crunchy cookie, and we could see them pairing well with tea. Those interested in trying the new cookie can contact their local Girl Scout Council to see which varieties are sold in your area. Once you get your hands on a box, consider pairing them with a glass of wine. Yes, really. We tried a few different combinations, and although not all of them worked, some like Moscato d'Asti and Trefoils were real winners, says Bridget Hallinan and foodandwine.com. That story published on January 7th, 2020. Kat Kinsman asks, what should happen to the spotted pig? Trish Nelson on Moving Forward, the painful conversation the industry needs to have and giving the pig back to the people. When it's your job to keep the party going, who do you turn to when it spins out of control? Trish Nelson has been in the restaurant industry since she was 14 years old. She loves it with her whole being. As part of her longtime job as a server at the Spotted Pig, Nelson was entrusted with making sure that the Friday night parties thrown by investor Jay-Z had free-flowing Patron and bodies packed to the walls in the notorious third-floor VIP party room. She revealed in her ability to mollify a cranky, famished guest and then give them the night of their life. This was Nelson in her element, crafting a luxe experience for people who are used to being pampered. This was Nelson in her truth as well, a blue-collar woman subject to the whims and wants of people who get their way, one way or another. On January 7th, a group of former Spotted Pig employees gathered around a podium in the offices of the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James, to announce the end of a months-long investigation that uncovered a hostile work environment and severe and pervasive incidents of unwanted touching and unwelcome sexual advances by majority owner Ken Friedman. Per the terms of the settlement, Friedman agreed to cut ties with the restaurant and give $240,000 of his own money and a share of his profits to be shared among the 11 former employees who had accused him of harassment and unequal treatment. Nelson had spoken out publicly, first to the New York Times and then to 60 Minutes, about an alleged assault on her by Friedman and the culture of fear that kept her from telling anyone outside the restaurant about the toxic mess in which she and her colleagues worked every day. This was as fundamental a part of the Spotted Pig as their iconic burger. Cross Friedman and he'll make it his business to get you blacklisted from the industry. But at that podium this week, Nelson raised her fist and her voice, delivering an emotional speech honoring the efforts of the Me Too, or the hashtag Me Too movement, questioning the structure of an industry built on the backs of the working poor, and pleading for those in power to have the painful but necessary dialogues it will take to move forward in a way that values the dignity and well-being of people who depend on these jobs for their livelihood. Our contributions to the whole of our society, however small they may seem, are impactful and important. Women and working class people like myself are the backbone of our society, and we deserve just as much as anyone else to be respected and treated like human beings, especially when we are in our places of employment. We are not disposable, we are valuable. That is what Nelson said. But what does this forward momentum actually look like in real life? Some of the offenders have been publicly identified, with a few being ousted from the daily operations of the restaurants or financially divested from their empires. And very few are actually facing potential criminal or civil charges for their actions. The AG's press conference noted that the department received credible information about alleged actions by frequent patron Mario Batai and is looking into him, his business partner, his management company, and his three restaurants separately. But what happens to all the hardworking people who still depend on this industry? Will the powerful investors who may have willingly ignored the exploitation behind the scenes now come forward and devote their dollars to making a healthier workplace? Can the people, including and especially women like Friedman's business partner April Bloomfield, who Nelson says enabled this culture, acknowledge their role and do the challenging necessary work to understand where and who they failed and make amends for it? Can well-heeled diners allow themselves the discomfort of learning about the emotional, physical, and financial toll taken on the invisible workers who facilitate their magical nights out? What does that actually look like? In an interview with Food & Wine, Nelson laid out her hopes for the future of the Spotted Pig. She said, "I would like to see those very powerful investors like Jay-Z and Bono and Fatboy Slim. What do they need with a failing restaurant? Why don't they buy Ken out, and why don't they donate those shares? Gift them to these working class women like myself who made that establishment and made April and Ken's empires what it was. I would love to turn that restaurant into a beacon of hope for the working class, for women," she said. That is Nelson in her interview with Food & Wine magazine. Nelson and her colleagues may not have been the public face of the restaurant, but they are the people whose experience, skill, and sweat made the magic happen day after day, late night after late night. She said further, "If I were able to actually take over ownership of the pig at some point in my life, along with the women who are part of this case, I would love the diners to feel like they were contributing to this general understanding of the restaurant industry's changing. In our hands, we would be able to actually implement protocol that would make our employees feel safe. we would be able to pull in outdoor HR resources. So that isn't just about our company being protected. It's about the people who work for us being protected. We would be able to donate a portion of the proceeds to RAINN, or RAIN, or just to truly bring it home to say we are invested in revamping this restaurant culture and being a leader in what a mentally stable establishment. You can feel proud eating here because you know you're contributing to change. That is what Trish Nelson further said in her interview with Food & Wine magazine. The story goes on to say the Spotted Pig is far from the only restaurant to foster an environment that is painfully detrimental to the well-being of its workers and is not isolated to the hospitality industry. Nelson, who's also a comedian, has seen the toll it's taken in other quarters, and while it's been intensely painful for her and for many others, she knows that pure rage, while valid and necessary as part of the process, is not what will help move the world forward. Very serious stuff there from Trish Nelson from the Spotted Pig restaurant. That's really, really scary stuff. Well, hopefully they get all worked out. It's unbelievable that someone would be treated that way, especially being a lady like Miss Nelson and her colleagues there. That's just really, really bad stuff. At the end of the story, it has the crisis text line listed because of the conditions it talks about. That's available at hashtag 741-741 or via Facebook Messenger, and the Rape, Abuse, and Incest Network, or RAINN, or RAIN. Counselors can be reached at 800-656-HOPE. It talks about that at the end of the story. This was featured on their Communal Table podcast with Kat Kinsman from foodandwine.com. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of And With Your Spirits, starting off this 2020. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for joining me. You've been listening to And With Your Spirits, an Iris original program. Thanks for sharing your time with Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, for over 30 years now. Let us know what you think about this program by calling 515-243-6833 or by visiting iowaradioreading.org. This has been Andrew Haupt with you for this week again. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a great week.